Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I speak to adopted adult Fiona. She shares her experience of growing up as an adopted child in the 70s and 80s. Fiona is honest in relation to the impact on her and how her life was influenced by her experience of dislocation and lack of belonging. Ultimately, Fiona hit rock bottom and she shares her experience of recovery from there. Fiona went on to be an adoptive parent herself and wrote about that and her experience of being adopted in her book, Adoption. As always, if you've experienced adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
Hello there, I'm Fiona. I'm an adopted person and I am an adoptive parent. And I would just like to share with you my story of being adopted and then how I came to adopt. So for me, I was adopted in the mid-60s. And I don't think I really understood I was adopted until I was about six or something. I remember, you know, my mother talking to me about, you know, being adopted, being special and chosen and all the nice things that I think, you know, they're told to tell you. And then, so, you know, all these things were being said. And my mum actually told me this. I was staring at it. I was sitting in the sink. I was brought up in the countryside, so I was sitting in the big Belfast sink, you know, getting a wash and whatever. And I was staring up at her, listening intently, so she thought. And I said to her, "Mummy, do you have holes in your ears?" So I hadn't really been listening. I had just been focusing on the holes in her ears. So, but I do remember being told I was chosen and special and wanted and all the rest of it. And then it started to dawn on me that I was actually different. You know, I wasn't the same as my brother and sister, you know. And then, like, behaviourally, I began to start behaving in a different way. You know, I was quite naughty and quite over-expressive, over-emotional, you know, and everything was a drama, you know. And I used to get told, you know, like, "Don't be having hysterics" and all that. And I was like, oh, I didn't think I was having hysterics. I thought I was just letting folk know, you know, I'm not happy about this. So, you know, as time went on, you know, things became a bit more difficult for me as well, because even going around in the village, you know, people, well, I thought everybody knew I was adopted because it was kind of said quite often, you know, to me anyway, in the home, that I was special and chosen and adopted and what it meant and all that. And I just didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And I just wished they would stop saying it, you know. And I said to my mum a couple of times, "Will you stop saying that? You know, I don't like it, you know, I don't want to be adopted." But, and then, you know, my behaviour started to get more erratic and more erratic. And I was starting to do really strange things, behaving very badly at school and getting into trouble. And, of course, teachers, it was a small village, small town and all the rest of it. And my older brother was, like, heroic. You know, he was 4 years older than me and he was absolutely amazing. He was drop-dead gorgeous. Everybody loved him. You know, he was action man of the village kind of thing. And so the teachers would say, "Why can't you be more like your brother?" You know, and I was like, "Well, I can't be like him. I'm adopted." Didn't you know? You know, so it was always a thing, you know. And then I remember my sister telling me that when she came up behind me, because I had been such a bomb scare at school, she came up behind me and the teachers were saying to her, "I hope you're not like your sister." You know, so it was kind of like there was the two sort of things going on. So behaviourally, I just couldn't really get a grip of myself at all. And I just couldn't express what I was feeling properly. And, you know, I went through a stage of being really horrible to my mother, you know, and saying, "You need to send me back. You need to take me back to where I came from. You know, I shouldn't be here. And I've got a sister that'll be wondering where I am," you know, because I'd always been told that I had an older sister that had been kept by my natural parent, which was a bit like, so what was so wrong with me then, you know?
That must have been really hard, though. I mean,
It was, because you do think to yourself, your immediate thought is, So what was wrong with me then? And obviously my behaviour's getting worse and worse, and I'm thinking, well, obviously I must have been a really bad baby. You know, I don't know what the fear of the thinking goes, but you think things because you're trying to work out why did that happen, you know. So anyway, things got a lot worse, you know, for me. And obviously they got a lot worse for my parents, you know, as well. They were really struggling with me. And I ended up being taken to a psychiatrist who, you know, I didn't really want to talk to him. I remember being quite fussy about that and saying, I don't want to talk to you. I don't know you. You don't know me, and I don't want to talk to you. And I remember my mum saying, you need to talk to him, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't want to talk to him because my behaviour had got to the point where I had actually tried to kill my little sister. I'd put a carrier bag over her head and tried to suffocate her in the night, thinking being if I got rid of her, then I would be maybe more popular and more liked and stuff like that, because she was the ultimate Shirley Temple little kid. You know, she was lovely. It's fine. I mean, my sister knows that I talk about this incident and she's okay with that. So that was the main reason for the psychiatrist being brought in, because this was obviously really distressing for everybody, you know. So what he did was he gave my mum some diazepam, the little blue tablets, and they were crushed into my dinner at dinner time so that I would sleep at night. So I suppose you're talking 70s, you know, you're talking the 70s, and things are maybe, you know, not as they are these days, where you would have been talked to and counselled, mentored, maybe got a buddy or somebody that, you know, could maybe identify with you or whatever. So I didn't get anything like that. And I would put that more so down to it being small town, small village, 60s, 70s, not so much known about everything as it is now. So I get to teenage years and I'm just totally out of control. And my parents are like, you know, you need to get a job and you can't live here and all the rest of it. And so they packed me off to a live-in job, which didn't go very well. I didn't last there very long. And I went from job to job, not really, you know, not really fitting in or being able to stay or focus or manage, you know, the responsibilities of a job, you know. So at 16, I went into a hotel. It was friends of my parents, and she said, I'll keep her, regardless of what she does, I'll keep her for the whole season. I was like, oh, great, you know. So I went in there and I sat there working. I was just doing cleaning and working in the kitchen and whatever, you know, just whatever. And I got introduced to, like, the bar and whatever, and there was, you know, there's a lot of staff there that lived in. It was in the middle of nowhere and folk were all drinking, and this guy started buying me drinks and whatever, and I was drinking them, thinking, oh, this is great, I'm so grown up, you know. And I was drinking all this, and long story short, he took me to his room and had sex with me, and I wasn't able to fight him off, you know, and I hadn't been in that position before. And when he'd finished with me, he made me sort of chucked me out the window almost. So, and I fell into nettles that were under his, because he didn't want me going out the door, because, you know, he didn't want that to be seen. So anyway, that was really awful. And I was kind of struggled to process that. And I thought, because of all the trouble before, I was kind of like, I can't really say much. I can't say anything. And I didn't say anything. So that job kind of came to an end. She did keep me for the season, which I'm sure she regretted it, this lady, but it wasn't very good. And off I went to London after that. I decided I wanted to be a nanny in London. So off I went to London, got a job in London, being a nanny, which was just ridiculous. But anyway, I did it, and I got involved in a whole load of other stuff in London. And I think my need to fit in, my need to be liked, wanted, part of the crowd, just led me to the wrong types of people. And for a few years, I was involved in drugs, alcohol. I ended up getting taken in by this girl. And she sort of talked me into staying in this flat, and, you know, it would be all right. And, all, you know, we had all this stuff, but we had to entertain some guys, you know, and that happened fairly regularly. So I was probably about 17 and a half by then when that was happening, and it was just horrendous. I managed to get out of that. And again, I was just so in such a mess, you know, inside, and not being able to express that either, because I'd got myself in this mess. My mum and dad were completely fed up with me. I felt like they didn't want me anyway, and all the rest of it, all the stuff that kind of was going along with that. And so life trotted on, going from one major disaster to another. And it, for me, I was always trying to find my nest. I was always trying to find, you know, where do I fit in? You know, what's my position in life? You know, I'm not like them, but, you know, am I like the people that had me? Well, I didn't know. And so, you know, things went from thing to thing. I got married and I was desperately wanting to have a child, because I thought to myself, if I have a child, that'll be mine and I can fit in with the child, and it'll fit in with me, and it'll be mine, and that'll be us.
So make your own nest.
Yeah, I'll make my own nest, and that'll be me. Life will be great, and I'll be, you know, I'll be okay then, and all the rest of it. So I got married, and all this. I couldn't have children, and there was just issues there. I couldn't fall pregnant at all. So I went and got some treatment and whatever. And one of the things that always gets asked when you go to the doctors or for any kind of treatment, what's your medical history? You know, do you have any? Is there anything of this nature in your family? I don't know, because I'm adopted. And there you have to say again, I'm adopted. I'm different. I'm not part of this, or, you know, and I don't know. I can't answer your questions because I'm adopted. So that was, I felt like that situation got really kind of, I needed to know what was wrong, and I wanted a child so desperately that I needed to know. So I decided to go and find my natural family. And I found them. It was very easy to find them, because they came from a very small village, and the village was known for a certain type of occupation. And that's how I found them. Through that occupation, I contacted that organisation and found them very quickly. And they had been desperately wanting and waiting for me to get in touch.
Wow.
So that was a big moment. I was 21.
Right.
21. I'd gotten as far as 21 then. So that was a big turning point.
So, I mean, people often describe that sort of, that's a moment that everyone's waiting for. And how was that moment? You know, was it everything that you'd wanted? Was it the nest?
No, not really. It wasn't the nest. It was interesting. It was interesting to like, my mum and dad actually drove me there, which was really good of them, you know. And they drove me there, and I remember walking in. I walked in. It was the granny's house, because I'd managed to find the granny, and I walked into the granny's house, and my natural parent was sitting there by the fire, and it was one of those moments where it was like, right, so what do we see, you know? And it's like, oh, hi, you know. And I just felt really awkward, because I thought, I don't actually know this person at all. All I know about this person is she didn't want me, you know. So I was kind of like, this is a bit weird. And she looked so like me. It was like we were like twins. It was so strange. So anyway, you know, I sat down, and the granny kind of took control of the conversation, because I think she was a bit awkward as well, you know. Then all the story came out about my older sister had been illegitimate, and the granny had said she would look after her while the mother went out to work, and then she'd done it again, and I was another illegitimate child who she said, right, I'll do it, you know, we'll look after this one, but you need to go out and work and whatever. Unfortunately, about 2 months after I was born, the granddad died suddenly out in the back garden. So the granny said she couldn't cope with a baby. She could cope with the older child, because she was running about and whatever. She couldn't cope with a baby. So I was then taken to my natural mother's sister, who had two boys. One was the same age as me, and one was the same age as the older sister that I had. Excuse me. So she was wanting a little girl. So I think maybe in all these small places, it was more sort of easier to just foist a child off somewhere, you know. So I'm there in this house with the auntie and the two boys, and this was auntie had her family maid. She had a little girl. So unfortunately, again, she discovered she was pregnant and she didn't want to have three babies. So she actually made the decision that I was going to social services. So off I went to social services and, you know, I was in an orphanage apparently for a couple of months until my mum and dad came and chose me. So that was just the backstory, which I was kind of like, I'm not sure if that makes me feel any better, you know. So.
And so, I mean, I guess I not adopted, obviously, but where do you go from there? What, how do you make sense? Because in some ways, all of the parts are now together, but do they fit?
Not really. It kind of, I did choose to go down to London because she lived in London with her family. She'd had another little girl, well, all grown up now, but then, and a little boy, and she'd had another boy that had died. So she, you know, she asked if I wanted to meet them all. So I went down to London to stay down there and I rented a little place and I got to know them all. But it became quite apparent that, you know, I was, again, the cuckoo in the nest. You know, I wasn't, like, I hadn't been brought up with them and they were all fairly close and they'd all been through the same stuff, you know, and I hadn't. You know, I had been through my stuff with my family, you know. So from there, it kind of, things just went, you know, my life didn't really get any better from finding them. But, you know, I got to that point where it was a kind of make or break kind of thing because, you know, a few sort of incidents had happened with them and I just felt so lost, you know, and alone. And I felt like I'd messed up with my own family. I've messed up with this family. I've got nothing left. And I ended up in a flat in the Gorbals in Glasgow, lying on a couch, steaming out my head. And I decided to chuck myself off the balcony. Like, the flat was 21 stories up. And I thought, I've got nothing left. I just need to end it all. You know, just get this over and done. Nobody wants me. I don't fit in there. Nothing's going to get any better. You know, and I'm in a mess. So I've got up on the balcony and it was kind of like a wide sort of balcony thing. And I sat on the edge of it and I was just going to push myself off. So I closed my eyes and I pushed myself off and I landed and I knew I was still alive. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even do that. Right, do you know what I mean? So I've opened my eyes thinking I've unfortunately, you know, I've broken everything or whatever's happened, I'm still here. But when I've looked at it, I've actually fallen into the balcony and pushed myself off at all. So anyway, that was that. That made me feel any, it didn't make me feel any better. You know, I was like, oh no, I can't even do that. So I just slinked off and just lay on the couch for a while, and I ended up phoning a couple of days later. I phoned my mum and dad and told, they didn't even know I was in Glasgow, they thought I was in London. Told them, you know, that I was in a bit of a mess, and they did come to the rescue and, you know, let me come home for a few days and whatever and get myself sorted. And off I went, you know, into more madness. So I've got married again, you know, and I'm still unable to have children. There's no problem with anybody else in the family, by the way. I did find all that out. There's no problem with anybody. I was the only one that wasn't able to have children. So, you know, I'm still not able to have children. I'm married again and, you know, he's wanting children and I can't have children. So, you know, life's sort of still going on in the same vein. I've become a bit more balanced, a bit more settled, still taking drugs, still drinking alcohol, but still feeling, you know, that sort of lonely, alone kind of, you know, I don't have that proper connection. I've never felt that proper connection with anybody or anything really, even with my husbands, you know, those, the two that I'd had by that time. There was a connection of sorts, but it wasn't, you know, like a connection. And I'm not sure, actually, you know, how adopted people make those proper connections, to be honest. because that feeling of not, you know, fully trusting that you're going to be rejected again or left or not wanted, it does stay with you. You know, I know that. So from there, that marriage ended because he left me because he'd got someone else pregnant. So that I'd sort of two marriages had ended because they'd gone off with other people, you know, because, you know, for one reason or another. So I left on my own. So to cut a long story short, is it that long? But yeah, anyway, I came to a place of faith in that sort of period, that period of my life. I came to a place of faith and I began to go to a church and everything and began to sort of wind off the drugs and alcohol. I don't want to say that God touched me and I stopped drinking and taking out the drugs straight away, because that's not what happened to me. But I did feel a sense of community and belonging and, you know, a sense of, you know, something better could come out of this life that I'd had and led. And so eventually the drugs and alcohol, you know, went. And I began to, you know, look at and start to unpick some of the stuff, you know, that I'd been sort of really messed up with. And that was good. And I went through a long season, you know, where things were okay. And then I got remarried to a wonderful man. You know, I've been married for nearly 20 years now, which is great. And, you know, it took a long time for that connection to actually happen in a sort of more serious way than I'd ever connected before, because I was always waiting for him to leave, you know, to dump me, to not want me, because, you know, I'm different. I'm not really normal, and I have these, you know, strange moments of strange moods and whatever, because certain things can trigger me off even now, you know, to that, oh no, you know, that's it, that person's not going to ever like me again, you know, they're not going to want to speak to me and all the rest of it. And I feel, you know, that does, it's all part and parcel of the initial rejection. And for me, you know, bearing in mind that I was rejected more than once, you know, I suppose kind of amplified maybe how, you know, I maybe felt it more significantly than some other people. So so then, you know, I was still yearning for a child. I was desperately wanting to make that nest, to have that, you know, that place of my own, that child of my own, to you know, to finally have that ultimate connection, you know, that just even being a mother brings, you know, regardless of the adoption stuff. And it just wasn't happening at all. So then, you know, I'm going through life and, you know, my husband and I have been going for infertility treatment and stuff like that, and nothing was happening. And eventually we got called in and, you know, unfortunately the consultant said that I was at an age in my life, I was 45, where my eggs had finished, you know, they were dead. So there was no hope, you know, I wasn't going to be able to have a child and all the rest of it. And I had never wanted to adopt because of my own feelings towards that.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I hadn't wanted to put that pain, you know, that, you know, it's hard to put into words how I felt about being adopted, you know, and so I didn't ever want to adopt because I didn't want to have a child that was suffering in that way, you know. And I just want to put something into perspective at that point, you know, my parents and my upbringing was incredible. I had a loving family. You know, my mother was a teacher, my father was a prison officer. We had a good, stable home. The only thing that was unstable in our home was me, you know. So, you know, I can't say that any of the stuff that I felt was because I was mistreated or treated badly or anything like that. It was just inside me. I could not manage to articulate how I was feeling except by, you know, losing my rag and doing ridiculous things. I threw a great big doll I had downstairs one day. I'd had a big fight with my mum and you know, we were fighting and shouting and bawling at each other, and I'd gone upstairs and I'd got this great big doll and I'd thrown it down the stairs. Made her think that I'd thrown myself down the stairs, you know, so I shouted, I'm going to throw myself down the stairs if you don't send me back where I belong. So I chucked the doll down. So it was just crazy stuff like that that had gone on. So anyway, we get to a point where, you know, I'm 45, I'm not going to have children, that there's some kind of decision needing to be made, because I have, my husband's a lot younger than me, he's 14 years younger than me, but he had, you know, he had said, it's fine, you know, it's not meant to be, you know, and obviously being, you know, faith-based, it's kind of like, okay, that's maybe not meant to be, at, you know, which I was kind of like, well, I'm not really agreeing with that, I still want to have a child, you know. So anyway, time moved on, and I went to a conference in America, and I was, it was a Christian conference, and it was a big conference, and I felt that God had said to me that he would give me a child at 50, and I was a bit kind of like, really? 50? You know, how are you going to do that? You know, and I couldn't work out how that was going to happen. But the way it came about was incredible, because my natural sister got in touch with me. We'd lost touch a little bit. We were just keeping tentative touch, you know, polite touch, I suppose, because my natural parent had died a few years later, and she was the sort of linchpin that kept the communications going. So she got in touch and said that my other sister had become a Christian and she was getting baptised, and she thought that I would like to come and surprise her. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And so I went up and surprised her and whatever on the day. And then that night, I stayed with her that night because they were all in Scotland and I live in Manchester. I'm in England. So she started to tell me about her son who had had a child. Him and his partner had a child. The child was born addicted to drugs. She was in quite a bad way. She'd had a brain hemorrhage with the withdrawals, were so severe. And she'd been in foster care ever since she'd been born because the parents were never going to get her. And I was like, wow. And she was looking for a permanent family. You know, she was needing to be adopted. And I was kind of like, this is so strange. And so I've come home, spoke to Brian, my husband Brian, and we decided to ask the social services if we would be considered to have her. We thought we wouldn't be because it was a kinship thing that that was needed. And we're not legally kin because I was adopted out of that family.
Of course, yeah.
You know. So we went ahead and made the application anyway. And everything kind of, there was loads of questions. We went through the whole procedure of, you know, everything being looked at. And we thought, you know, as well, that our backgrounds of drug addiction and all the rest of it would go against us. But we were very honest in the process of all the things that you have to go through to have a child placed in your care. And we were very honest about everything. And, you know, in the midst of it all as well, my husband got testicular cancer, which we thought would stop the process happening as well. But it didn't, because the prognosis was good. So anyway, long story short, our daughter was placed in our care 6 weeks before my 51st birthday. So I did get the child that was promised to me at 50, you know, and it was just incredible that that child is part of me. You know, she has, she looks very like me. She has the same kind of quirky personality that I do. And one of the most amazing things about having her is, you know, no, she doesn't see her parents, you know, her mother actually died, so she's not going to see her. And her natural dad is not in a position yet to meet her. But one of the great things about, you know, making the decision to take her is she's going to know where she came from. You know, she's going to know where she came from. She's going to know that she looks like, you know, her nana. She looks like this one. She's got her, you know, she's got her big, huge brown eyes there from her dad, you know, and her granddad. You know, she's going to have the full story about where she's come from. even though, you know, she's going to be told that she's, you know, she's not ours and whatever, she doesn't really know. She does have some developmental issues, which means it's going to be maybe a bit trickier in the process of letting her know everything and how, you know, she knows she has a tummy mummy and a tummy daddy, you know, and she knows that tummy mummy died. So that was a bit traumatic for her. She went through a bit of a trauma with that herself, but she seems to be out of the other side of that now because she does know Nana, which is tummy mummy's mummy. So it's, you know, it's very positive for her, which for me is what I'm most happy about, is that she is going to have a more positive experience of being adopted than I had, you know, because I was in the dark. And going through a lot of the stuff that I had to go through with my daughter, I found out about adoption trauma. I'd never heard of adoption trauma. I didn't know it was a thing. You know, it wasn't something I'd ever heard about, you know, at all. And when I looked into it more and more, I realised that, you know, an answer for me for a lot of what I'd gone through and felt, you know, and not been able to manage could be put down to adoption trauma, you know. And it really kind of, it unleashed something in me that was like, wow, you know, people need to know my story. People need to know, you know, what happened to me and how it happened and, you know, and how I've managed, you know, to work myself through this process, you know, because once I realised that the adoption trauma was a thing, I went and got counselling. I paid for professional counselling because I knew that there was stuff that needed unpicked, unravelled, looked at, you know, and dealt with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really interesting story, and I mean, it's not a story, it's your life. I'm fascinated that for so many years, you know, you're shaking your fist at adoption. To put it nicely, you know, quite not unreasonably, and then to find yourself in these circumstances where you were becoming an adoptive parent yourself. And do those two things still sit comfortably, or do you have sort of conflicted feelings at times about that?
I think because of the situation surrounding our daughter, you know, I feel that it is a much more positive situation. And I also feel, you know, because I went so many years being so annoyed at being adopted and, you know, and not wanting to adopt so that I didn't voice this pain on anyone else, I kind of feel like I may have missed out years ago because, you know, it may not have been the same for a different adopted child, if you know what I mean. You know, if I'd chosen to adopt years ago, you know, I probably still would have been able to make it a more positive experience because I would have done as much as I could to find out as much as I could about where that child had come from. And this day and age, you get letterbox contact, you get, you know, there's all sorts of things in place where you can have contact of some sort if it's deemed appropriate and whatever. So I feel like I've missed out, you know, probably on years of parenthood that I could have had just because of my own, you know, feelings on adoption, my adoption.
Yeah, and it's, I guess you, in some ways your adoption fixes some of the issues, your experience of adopting, sorry, it fixes some of the experience, those problems, because there's that genetic link that she isn't out of the family, she's still part of the family, isn't she?
It is fairly, I think it's a fairly unique situation.
Yeah,
I haven't yet come across anybody else that's, you know, done that kind of thing, you know, or had that kind of situation, but it just may be that I haven't come across them yet, but I'd love to meet somebody else that
it does sound pretty unique in just the conflation of peculiar events. I mean, I guess the other question, and maybe it's a big question, is how do you feel about adoption generally? Because your circumstances of your view adopting sort of resolve some of the resolve some of the problems. And so really, it's not like most, or like you said, like most every adoption. Looking into the other adoptions and the people who, you know, your peers, mm-hmm. how do you feel about that?
I think adoption in itself has its positives, you know, more so, I would imagine, for the adoptive parents, because, you know, I would say the majority of adoptive parents are adopting because they're maybe in the same position that I was in. They can't have children naturally. Yeah. So, you know, I can see the positive in that. But I think, you know, these days as well, it's even more of a positive thing, because those adoptive parents will have more information. So it's, I think for us older adoptees that didn't get the information, you know, or maybe got a snippet, you know, for me in particular, I think the sister thing, I should never have been told that. Do you know what I mean? I don't know why it was maybe deemed appropriate to tell me that, you know, but yeah. it was told to me anyway. So I suppose now in other situations, I would imagine every adoptive situation is different, because the children are coming from different backgrounds, different situations. Siblings now can be adopted together and stuff like that. They're not all split up, you know, sometimes they are. So, and I've kind of lost the thread of the question, but I think my answer is adoption is a fairly positive thing for adoptive parents,
yeah.
But it's still not necessarily always positive for adoptees. I think adoptees still struggle identity-wise, connection-wise, you know, and the fitting in thing, you know, as well. And again, if I'd been brought up in a family maybe where all three of us had been adopted, would I have felt as strongly as I felt? You know, would I have been such a cuckoo in the nest kind of feeling? I'm really different feeling. I'm not like her. I'm not like him. They were both extremely clever and did very well at school, whereas I was kind of average, bordering on under average. And then the behaviour side, you know, he was good and strong. She was cute and curly, you know, and you know, she never even spat in the wind wrong. Whereas I was just out there, bad.
Can I ask, this is somewhat irrelevant, just it's a question I've got to ask. Is your parents, your adoptive parents, what do they think of the fact that you've now adopted? Because of all the years, you shaking your fist.
Well, unfortunately, they're both dead. So they never saw me. I mean, my mum, you know, she knew how desperately I wanted to have a child, you know, and my brothers and sisters have all had children and whatever, and I was always the one that got fags and a bottle of wine, you know, at Easter when everybody else, kids got Easter eggs, and, you know, it was a kind of sorry card, you know, you can have that. So, I think my mum would have been delighted, you know. I think she would have been delighted, and she probably would have said, "Well, I hope you reap what you sowed."
It sounds like a proper mam sort of thing to say, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I know that you, your story is your story, but I know that you go beyond, you tell your story to different communities, and you've got a message, I guess, that you want to share with people about your experiences, and you want to help people. So tell me a little bit about that, because you've written a couple of books, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I have written a couple of books. I've written, the first book was more about all the growing up side of stuff and the things that I did, and, you know, the addiction and all the things that happened to me. You know, there's a lot of things in the book that I haven't said here because I didn't feel it was appropriate, you know, just to say it here. And then it goes on to, you know, finding my faith and you know, not being perfect at that either, you know. And then the second book is just called Adopted, and that more focuses on, you know, the being told, that story I said, told you about looking at my mum's ears, that story's in there, and little bits and pieces about, you know, how I felt about certain things, and, you know, some of the issues that, you know, we've kind of faced, you know, the lack of connection, identity, jealousy, you know, not fitting in, and all the rest of it is all in there. And, you know, the failed relationships as well, that's in there, and the infertility and how that made me feel, you know, is in there. And then going on to adopt our little girl from the family I was adopted out of, that's in there as well. So, yeah, you know, I just felt it was important to split the stories apart, you know, and as much as that's just me, you know, there, that's just me being an idiot and then getting things right. And then this is actually adopted, you know, this is what it was like, you know, for me.
And where can people, if people are interested in buying that or seeing that, where can people go to?
Amazon's the go-to kind of place. The Adopted comes out in December. It's just going through its process at the publishers just now. But the first book's out there, and it's selling fairly well.
And what's it called, the first book?
Oh, it's called This Is Me, No Darkness Too Deep.
And that's
because
Fiona
some
Miles.
Of the stuff, yeah, by Fiona Miles, because some of the stuff was pretty dark. Yeah.
I mean, we'll put the links into the show notes as well, so people can just click on them and go through. Was there any questions you were hoping I would ask that I have not asked and you'd like to answer?
I don't think so. I don't know, really, because I know that I just wanted to, you know, tell my experience, you know, of adoption, and also, you know, my experience then of, you know, being so against adoption and then ending up, you know, adopting myself, you know. So yeah, I just really wanted to, you know, let people know my story, I think is the best way to put it. But no, there isn't any questions I can think of that you should have asked, you know?
Excellent. That's my favourite question to ask at the end. Well, thank you so much, Fiona, for your time. I really appreciate you sharing and being so honest. And I think that you've certainly given people who are listening food for thought. And obviously, I think it'll resonate with a lot of people who are adopted, some of your own, you know, feelings and experiences. So thank you very much.
No problem.